Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology. Here is today's host of Startup Hustle. Today, we're going to be talking about scaling globally and tips for success. And before I introduce today's guest, today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Today's guest, we actually met through partnership within our agencies, and we're just discussing the best ways to bring brands overseas, international, scaling internationally, and just picking each other's brain, really talking about how we can help and service our brands the best. And I knew I needed to get him on the show so we could get to know him a little bit better and really just talk about the opportunity that is out there for brands to scale internationally. So without further ado, Steph, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andrew. Nice to be here. I'm happy to talk to all those hustlers out there grinding every morning, every night, trying to make some money. I've been there, done that, still doing that. So it's cool to be guest in this awesome podcast.
Steph is tuning in tonight from the Netherlands, and it's 9:30 p.m. there. So thanks for being on the show. I know our listeners love getting a lot of the guests that e-com is able to pull in from all over the world, because e-com is something that unites a lot of us. You know, it's something that you can be doing it in the UK or the EU or the Netherlands or Australia or Canada or US. A lot of the same strategies, bring us together. The network's really, really pretty small when you get around to it. So, Steph, you're with a company called Marketplace Distri. Am I pronouncing that right, or you got a little accent on that?
Correct.
Okay. I like to get it right, do my best to try to pronounce things right. And I already
avoided already pronounced my name already good. So that's the biggest achievement.
Okay. Steph Van Bokel.
Yeah.
We're close. So, Marketplace Distri, before we'll get into that a little bit later, but really an agency that helps US Amazon sellers and brands really expand internationally and into Europe. But like myself, I'm sure you have a story in how you got into this type of position, helping Amazon brands and helping them scale. Where does your entrepreneurial journey start? Like, did you come out of uni knowing you were going to be a businessman or a marketer, or how did you fall into the Amazon world? Where's your journey begin?
Well, it didn't start with Amazon. Okay. I'm surely also not going to end up with Amazon. I was not too ambitious when I was young at school. I was not, doing too well, but on a certain moment, I don't know, something tweaked in me and I became ambitious, but mostly not Actually, it's actually a fun story. It was a sort of
you should tell it. Tell it as detailed as possible.
Yeah, it's actually now I'm a little bit embarrassed, but I was like 20, and then a friend of mine got in a network marketing business, and then from that moment on, I thought, okay, apparently everybody can make money. I can also drive a Ferrari, and that sort of sparked something, and that basically never went away. Now 20 years later, let's say, or 18 years later, never made any money in that business, like basically nobody, but it at least stimulated me to start thinking in starting my own business. And the first business that I actually launched was a tree nursery.
Okay.
So a friend of mine with who I was in school, international business, he wanted to start a tree nursery. And I just basically said, okay, let's join. And
what year was this? What year was this?
This was, I think, 2006, something like that, around that area. So that was actually the first business, but that the business actually I sold, not like a big exit or something. That doesn't work with the tree nursery. Basically, you grow trees, and then after certain years, they are mature enough to be sold against a higher price. So basically, you sell out. But what I didn't like about the business, it was not scalable. It was very labor-intensive job, and you need to be every, you know, when the sun was shining, you need to go out there, making sure that the fields were vetted, let's say. And so it was a very labor intensive job. It also keeps you very local. Yep. You were unable to move. So obviously e-commerce has always been the reputation that you can do whenever, wherever, in any form of shape. So then shortly after that, I actually went into the e-commerce business. I've been in the marketplace industry already for 12 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to me about the tree nursery. Had you ever worked with plants or trees or like, you know, I want some of the story. So you're just like, okay, I'm going to start a business.
Yeah, well, he knew and I just wanted to work. So I didn't really basically care if he said, I basically didn't care what it was. I just saw an opportunity to make some money. And didn't have any preference. Also didn't because I think I was actually discussing it a few days ago with actually also CEO of one of a very large e-commerce company in Southeast Asia. Most of the people, they just jump into a business because whatever, they got familiar with it, they worked at the company stopped, they wanted to continue or whatever. If you have a certain expertise, you're sort of creating your own SWOT analysis and your own funnel. Nowadays, when a business opportunity comes by, you run it by your own, let's say, criteria funnel. So you start recognizing, can I recognize the risk? Can I recognize the opportunity? Can I protect the margins? Is it a business that I like? Do I have the right capabilities? The capabilities that I need, do I want to find those capabilities? So after a certain years of experience, you're much in a better position to start judging where and how you can make money. And also, it's also recognizable in the revenues and the margins you're making or year over year. In the beginning, when you start working as a business, basically nobody makes money. Well, 1 year, yes, other year, no. But if after a certain number of years, you start recognizing, okay, instead of having 1 year on and you're 1 year off, you start recognizing, okay, I have now 5 years on and 1 year off. Because obviously, no business is always going to be profitable, right? It's almost impossible. So I think that's the learning curve that you go through.
100%. Okay, so the tree nursery business is done. You're moving on. You're thinking e-commerce because you want geographical freedom. You want to be able to move around and not be localized.
It actually started. It was quite interesting. I was working in a company in sales, and there was one of the investors was a trader. So like he was buying bulk stuff from, you know, company goes bankrupt. He buys down some old stock and then sells it. And I was actually a client of Groupon. And I liked the product, so I was telling a friend, and the friend said, why don't you just put it on Groupon? And I said, why not? So basically, I called Groupon and said, hey, back then Groupon, keep in mind, was a daily deal site mm-hmm. where you can only get activities, right? Only events.
Go hiking or
experiences, exactly. Then on a certain moment, they launched one product per day. That's it. Nowadays, they have hundreds. It's a marketplace. So basically called them and say, okay, I have a product. It was an air purifier. Are you interested in buying it? And then they said, yeah, we can, but you are responsible for the logistics and the customer support and the landing page. So I said, okay, shit, I don't have that experience, but I mean, how difficult can it be?
How hard can it be?
Yeah, exactly. So so they put the product online and my wife came back from work and my apartment was a warehouse. So that's how I got roll into it. Then I immediately also started saying Coupon was active in the Netherlands, but also in Germany, France, Italy, Spain. So I thought I was not thinking about all the complexity working internationally. So I just called also France, Italy, and Spain. And they said, yeah, why not? You were successful in the Netherlands. Why don't you also sell it in all the other countries? And that's basically how the whole international operational setup started.
As you navigated kind of just like how to ship, how to handle the logistics, like how to get set up in those countries to sell, exactly. Really started with Groupon.
Yeah, with Groupon. Yeah. I was actually for 2 years, I was one of in Groupon Europe, one of the largest providers. So what I basically did, and that was quite interesting, if I now look back, any deal is a 24-hour deal, and every product needs to be a trend product. So I was continuously scouting for brands and products that that on one hand I could get large quantities, get good payment terms, and also get good discounts, because obviously you needed to go give big discounts. 30% went to discount, then a part went to Groupon. So you started becoming, let's say, quite quick on the feet when it comes to convincing brands to start thinking internationally and start investing. So that also helped me gaining knowledge in how to steer brands to also start thinking international.
For me, I've been in the Amazon space 12 years. Was one of the very first, even in a round table at Amazon there in Seattle, for international brands, Amazon sellers that are selling internationally. I had one brand, at the end of it, we started at about 500,000 a year. We ended at like 17 million across all of our Amazon, channels. We were in 11 different countries. So, very early on was looking for opportunities and ways to expand, some because of just the clients I was this particular client I was working with was open to it. We only had 3 SKUs, with no real barrier. It wasn't like a food item or something like that. Right. So it was a cleaning product.
Right.
So it was, great reviews, good price point, and expanding internationally just made sense. We were on Canada before there was a unified account. That created a nightmare for anyone that knows Amazon, just having separate an old grandfathered in Canada account, things like that. But I saw early on the opportunity for international expansion on Amazon and the options it gives you and the ability to try things on your US account because you have stability in these other accounts. You know, you can be just more maneuverable and try things. So obviously as the aggregators have come in the Amazon space, anyone that knows our arena that we play in, if they're talking to a US brand, they're thinking, okay, what are the opportunities? And a lot of that is international expansion, right? But that was something I knew way before, just from having a taste of it. Seasonality in Australia, for winter brands here, it was a different seasonality. Right. The German market was a big one, just launching there. And in the early days, you could just send product to Germany or the UK and it would, distribute across. But these were things like that for me, I knew way before I knew how to communicate it. Like I knew it was a great opportunity. I just couldn't speak to all of the different things that went into like VAT and taxes and, things were changing fast where I think at one point in Germany or UK, you could just ship right into FBA. And then soon after you had to have a warehouse, you had to have a business there. Yeah. That changed a lot of things, a lot of pivots. And not to take us down a rabbit hole, But just like, you know, a lot of learning is by doing, or you learn little bits and pieces as you go. As an agency, you get all these opportunities because of the different brands you're working with.
Right.
You know, where are they and what are they doing? And, you know, getting to kind of like win or lose on their dime, you know, as you learn, as they're pushing you to try new things. So I was definitely a Groupon customer back in the day. Like, I loved Groupon. Talk to me how, like, you know, just a little bit of the details, how it went from a warehouse in your apartment, you know, with your wife or girlfriend at the time, to, you know, now you're selling in these Groupons of these different countries around you, and maybe even trying to get U.S. product into Europe to sell on Groupon. I'm not sure. Talk to me how that started to evolve for you.
Well, you touched already some very interesting topics. All the things you're discussing, a lot of people don't really understand, is that Amazon, Netherlands, Amazon, UK and Germany, Amazon.com is still the same platform with the same type of consumers, but that 99% of the Amazon sellers in the US don't sell on a pan-European level. That's crazy. 99% don't do it. But I believe in that a business should be run without borders. And then I'm going to answer your question, but I think it's a really interesting thing to really understand. Before the internet, long, 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 long time ago, if you had a business, you would have for example, you were selling TVs. And then you were selling TVs in one city. And if there would be a competitor sitting 50 kilometers further, or let's say 100 kilometers further, no issue, because you were just targeting your own area. Then internet came, and then there was one entrepreneur that was smarter, that was basically removing all the clients from all those brands because he was smarter than the rest. So your competitor field enlarged quite quickly, because you didn't look at the competitors in 50 miles area. We're looking at, you know, hundreds of miles area. But nowadays, the businesses there are much more operational solutions to start thinking cross-border. So now you have a global competitive field. So, and that's, I think, a big shift that we are now recognized specifically in Europe, is that you can be a local hero, but it's temporary. If you don't start investing immediately on an international level, on a certain moment, you're going to get eaten away by the big players. Because if you start working internationally, you're going to generate more resources. And the one with more resources over time is gonna win. But just as a small point, and I also want to touch the aggregator field, a very interesting field. So how does it basically go? So I immediately started thinking internationally, because I had a good relationship with Groupon. Groupon was active in multiple countries. The difficulty with Groupon is this is just a 24-hour deal. So you make money for 24 hours, and then, you know, the next days you have nothing.
You have to find something.
It's always quite complex to start continuously finding a new trend product. And then obviously there were competitors, and there was just one deal. So you can imagine it was quite a hustle. But if a product was successful in one country, they are most of the times also successful in the other country. So it was more easy to find one product and then just started launching it in 10 different countries. So to give a bit of an insight, the consumer in general wants to have a local experience. When the consumer has the idea that buying something outside their own country is going to impact the conversion rate, the customer experience, etc. So that you learn through the hard lessons, let's say, that you learn through experience.
I would say, not to interrupt, but I just to add some color, I would say, like, the one exception to that, at least as a U.S. guy that orders from internationally, is oftentimes I might get a custom product from Etsy or something like that from Europe. Like, and that for me is like this is a custom made thing from Europe. It's more like I actually see that as a positive.
Right.
And I'm willing to buy it without it being local or like made in USA, because I'm like, it's a custom item from Europe. It's unique. I can't get it here. It's something special that I want. Anything else, I think, falls under that bucket of what you're saying. That's like, I get a little bit disenfranchised with something that's international. If it's coming from China or it's coming from somewhere else that I could get it locally, I'm going to try to get it locally.
Right. No, it's true. You need to be really like and love the product, and then the experience that it is crafted in a certain area. You get a sort of romantic idea, but when it's not that emotional buy, then you look at more the practicality, and then you just basically get scared. Will I get my product? Can I return it? Can I contact the customer support? Do they have a bank account where I can transfer money? Those type of thoughts, specifically when you focus on the mass market, you want to avoid such thinking. So it evolved quite quickly from that. So, but nowadays you can go, for example, to a large, for example, to UPS or DHL, and you say, I want to have an international logistical contract. Back then that was impossible. So I needed to fly to Paris to talk to La Poste. I flew through UK to talk to Royal Mail. I flew to Scandinavia to talk to Bring. And basically you make local arrangements, but then also you learn that per country, the service level is completely different. And just to give you a very simple and practical shitty example, I made an agreement with Bring. And Bring is then the largest local shipping company. But I didn't really look at the terms. So one of the terms was that the nearest post office doesn't have to be closer than 100 kilometers. So that's a really weird thinking, because in the Netherlands, the borders from left to right is just 100 kilometers. And then there's, 60 million people living there. So there are post offices everywhere. But then you immediately need to start managing customer support, because people say, I have to drive 100 kilometers. I want to return. I don't want to have the product anymore. So then you have a client that you're paying back. You have stock in Norway or in Finland or in Sweden that you're trying to get back. Then they say, we only ship back once per 3 months. So it's a very cash capital business.
That sounds like that could have been the first learning lesson on that one, could have been costly.
Exactly. So what's the problem with the operational business of what you want to avoid are variable costs that you cannot control. And these are costs that you are unable to control. So if you don't understand how it works, you're for sure not going to make money.
I'll tell you, because, Americans, we have 50 states, like all our states, we might have like 10 different countries here in the US technically, like as far as like the way that the states are and how they run. And we have got Montana and Wyoming, a lot of places like that are just lots of land and far apart from, other, like something like Jersey, where we've got like a lot of cities together. Thinking about, I took a trip and this, like, I remember it vividly. Like, I took a trip with my mom, 2019. I took her to Italy. It was like a goal of mine to take my mom on a trip.
Okay. We went to Italy. Where did you go? Because I actually live in Italy.
Okay. So they went to Rome. I went to Madrid.
Okay.
They did the Rome thing. I was in Madrid with my friend, and then I went to Valencia, and then I met them in Venice.
Okay.
So we did Venice and then Milan.
Okay.
And I met them in Venice, beautiful city. For me, I mean, I'm just love history. So, being there in Venice, I love that, just for a little color, like the city was bustling, but there was no cars or streetlights. And so it was like quiet, and it was just, to me, that was just beautiful to like kind of see people moving around, and in a big city, you can hear people talking because it's not just like honking and, starting and stopping of cars and motorcycles. And it was just kind of beautiful. But my point of telling that story was, I'm in Italy, I'm seeing things for the first time, and in Venice, everything is by boat, and I seen just this, I don't know what you call those, like canoes, But I saw one full of Amazon packages.
Oh, really?
And, it was just for me to think about like the last mile, like how do these products actually get delivered here in Venice?
Yeah.
Probably a lot like other cities that are just have their challenges to them. It was literally a guy on a boat, like, with his stick paddling his way through the canals, delivering the packages. And I'm just like, wow, they're reaching every corner of the world, right?
Yeah.
But we're talking about Groupon before your Amazon story begins, and talking about some of the challenges there, like in Norway and Sweden and things like that. And having to deal with all the different carriers. I can imagine, some of my biggest mistakes in e-commerce and in Amazon, even for other clients, have been logistical mistakes.
E-commerce is logistics. It's all about, also from the customer experience, It's about logistics. If you look at the complaints, it's almost about the product was delivered too late, or I was not aware that it's going to be delivered. Or so e-commerce is operations, is logistics for sure.
Okay, so keep going. You know, you're dealing with you're flying to these countries, you're making arrangements with the distributors or shipping providers or postal services in each of these countries. Still doing those one day sales on Groupon.
Exactly.
Like, had you evolved at all at this point, like in regards to like maybe selling on other channels or?
No, actually, what was happened? We were very much specialized in doing big volumes, but it was becoming quite a complex business because you were kind of capital intensive business with low margins. So actually, after I think 3-4 years of scaling it from. I don't know, from zero to, I think in the last month, I was doing 600K in 1 month. It was no longer profitable. So I decided to actually close the business. And that was quite a difficult thing. You know, I had like 25 FTE back then that I basically had to call them all in and say, hi, guys, the market is changing. It's more competitors. The margins are too low. So basically, we closed the company to avoid actually going into the minus and go bankrupt and leave people with debts with the company. That's something that I didn't want to do. And that was in 2014.
Okay.
And then what I then did, but I had obviously my network and my experience. So what I started doing is, okay, I was hiring myself as a consultant to say, okay, you want to start selling internationally. And I was not only doing Amazon, I was not doing Groupon, I was doing multiple e-commerce sales channels by then. So I started to become an interim manager, basically working inside companies from 6 months to a year to set up the international operation. So I was looking at the warehouse management system, the customer support, which language did they speak, the logistical providers, which had what were the terms. So basically working inside and making the company scalable to start selling on an international level.
And was this European businesses going to the US, or was this US businesses or international businesses?
Actually both. I launched a few businesses in the US, a Swiss company and a German company and a Dutch company. But I also helped a lot of US brands coming to Europe. Actually, the reason why I started Marketplace Distry is because an American company, I was sitting at the Amazon headquarters to for them set up the, because they're quite successful on Amazon, they did like 7 million on Amazon.com selling stethoscopes. And they basically hired me to set up the European operation, also to start working with Amazon. And then I was talking with Amazon after doing years of this consultancy type of activities. And Amazon was saying, yeah, but we have a big problem. All the brands have an issue of working with us because from an operational and contractor point of view, you cannot compare Amazon with any other sales channel. So then I was actually flying back and I was like in the airplane. I said, okay, instead of going from project to project to project, why don't I design the complete infrastructure around this massive sales channel? Because Amazon in Italy, for example, and the rest of Europe, so 50% of the total e-commerce market, and I offer it as a service. So I call it IaaS, Amazon Infrastructure as a Service. We have the whole shebang in-house, from the warehouse, the logistics, the customer support, the translations, everything that we do in-house. And from that moment on, that was in 2018, I launched Marketplace Distry and went to companies saying, okay, Amazon is the largest sales channel. You are not operational capable to work with them, but so you're missing the opportunity. You cannot invest in your own in-house setup because it's going to take you minimum 6 months and a couple of hundred thousand euro. And still you're not going to be on a professional level. So why don't you just let us organize it? And you're immediately working with our borders and on a professional level. And that's how it basically got started.
I love that. I love that. Solving that, just using your experience from one, leapfrogging into another, consulting for 4 years, and then ultimately building your agency. And honestly, my journey is not
that. We are an agency. We are an operator.
Correct.
Because, what you, I don't blame you, obviously, but in the US, Amazon is all about performance. brand development, brand reputation. Well, in Europe, if you don't control the local operations, there is no brand development. So we are an operator, and actually we work with agencies like yourself to develop a brand end to end.
I love it. As an agency, so I'm a bit of a hybrid, and I think that's where my terminology can get confused, because we're doing multiple things here at Marknology. I've got my 10 plus brands of my own that I'm building, and we have warehousing, and we're doing the operations and fulfillment and branding and marketing and the full nine yards. And then, as an agency, we have to depend on the brands that we're working with to cover the operational side, right? We are dependent on their inventory, supply chain, fulfillment partners. We're dependent on all of those things to our success as their agency. Even on the US side, even without going internationally, right? There's a level of it. And there's others that have been built, like Pattern would be one that I think of, that they buy the product from the brands and then control everything. But there's a lot of brands that want to be able to do that in-house and manage their branding, their content, their customer data, their PPC, all of those things. So there's always going to be, multiple types of customers. But if you told me the number one thing, we started something a couple years ago. We were just like tired, exhausted here at the team. We were just like writing on the whiteboard, and we wrote the 10 commandments of Amazon. And, the first three were inventory, right? Because you can only do so much if brands can't handle their supply chain, like nothing else matters, right? Operationally. Right. And depending on where you are, the US can be even kind of lax. You can think that Amazon's tough, but I'm telling you, go to some of these other countries and try to sell there, and don't fall in line. Don't get your operations right, and you'll be shut down in no time, And right. If you know anything about Amazon, one count being in trouble can make the others in trouble. And it's just, it's a domino effect. Before I jump into our next set of questions, finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available testers, leaders, developers are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Thankful for our sponsors. Steph, back to you. Okay, so 2018, and I was just comparing to that because for years, Marknology is technically going on our ninth year as an agency. Since I created the LLC, I started hiring and building my team. But really, the first 3 or 4 years were really project to project, being right. A consultant, being a contractor, being a freelancer. The industry hadn't developed, and I was just gaining experience, much like yourself. Taking right. on projects, taking on brands, trying to get my name out there, trying to learn about e-commerce and business on the go along with brands. And I would say it's really 2017, 18, 19. And, these are the years that really we started being an agency, a legitimate company, knowing what our model was, knowing what I was trying to solve for, knowing who I was trying to help. So, the glory years of 14 through 18 on Amazon, where private label sellers were crushing it and millions were made and millionaires were made, more millionaires than anywhere else. Those were the hot years. Those were the years I got all of my experience. So mm-hmm. I wasn't building my own brands at that time, but in that time period, where it was the entrepreneur, the 4-hour work week guy trying to come and build something quickly and get out, or build something to not have to work a lot. I think from 17, 18 on has been where more of the legitimate, not that anyone else is not legitimate, forgive my words, but where more established brands are taking Amazon seriously. True. And saying, hey, we need help with this. We need to go into this. We need an agency, or we need a partner to help us, facilitate this. And that's where Marknology really got some legs. Right. when those brands really started coming to the platform. So knowing we're on kind of the same timeline in regards to just being in this space and then bring legitimacy to our company and really offering that service and knowing what we're really offering, because we were really pioneering the space. There was, there was no even partnership with Amazon till 19 or 20. Right. That was their first partnerships. And we were on board then, but those didn't even exist until 19 or 20. So they weren't even thinking about agencies or partners or anything like that before then. It was just a bunch of consultants, contractors, freelancers, out there doing our thing. So were like at this time, I guess, like you create Marketplace Distri, you know, like what your offering is and how you're going to offer it. And you're like, look, let's just get them out of the way. We're going to make sure that we hit all of these things. To me, that's somewhat what Amazon is in general. It is a marketplace that forces you to hit these operational goals, like, or you have to go. Talk to me about what happened next. Was it like, you know, has it been an uphill battle for me being first in the Amazon space in regards to services? Like, it was an uphill battle trying to get brands to understand why they needed our help and how we could help and those types of things, because they weren't hearing it from other sources. It wasn't in all of the news. It wasn't in all these articles and things like that. Now it is. It's a lot easier conversation. But what was it like for you there in Europe, you know, kind of taking what you had as a consultancy into the next level?
Well, I think the podcast called Hustle. So I started hustling to the max, basically using my Groupon experience, talking to brands every day. You should start thinking internationally. You need to, because back then I did like 3,000 campaigns with hundreds of different suppliers. So I got quite experience with explaining brands that the future is e-commerce, the future are marketplaces, and the future is cross-border. So once I went out of the consultancy business and I started recruiting brands again for Amazon, I was just picking up the phone, calling, and become in a very short term, one of the largest catalog suppliers in Europe. We have over 330,000 agents right now alive. Yeah, crazy, really crazy. So that was really hustling to the max, getting as much brands in as possible. And now if you look back in this learning curve over these last years, is that, I mean, I thought I understood, but I didn't, right? The product that we were offering was not fine-tuned enough to, on one hand, serve my needs, but didn't serve the needs of the brands. So it's been quite a ride, not only for me, but for the whole team, also within the management team. We are now completely different running the business than 4 or 5 years ago. So you start up with an idea as a former consultant perspective to think you have something all figured out, but during the way you are realizing, okay, this is a same with running a business is like a moving puzzle. You continuously need to puzzle the market developments, competitors that are coming up, prices are increasing specifically in the last 2 years. But that's also a bit, I think, the fun and the challenging part of running a startup.
No, 100%. And I think that's what's, if you're not looking to A/B test and try new things and continue to innovate and learn, e-commerce is just not the right business model for you. You need to be somewhere else because, you know, it's one of the most exhausting things about being an expert, I guess, if you want to call yourself in that space, is that the demand is, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you used to, like, if you worked 20 years at something, you were a pro. You knew it inside and out. You were going to do that job. You were going to grow trees, make them, you could diagnose them, see the disease on the leaves, like know what they needed, know what they weren't getting. You could just, you know, you're going to do that every single day. You're going to get amazing at it and you're going to be a pro. In e-commerce, you could take your foot off the gas or stop learning for 2 years and be done.
Exactly.
It could be old news, you know? So it is something that's stressful to anyone that's an industry expert. I think it's also why it's so important to have a team, because a team can learn in different areas all the time and continue to bring that knowledge back to everyone. And why, you know, you can't have just one man or woman in your team running e-com or Amazon for you. It's just too hard for them.
True. There is no such thing as Amazon manager. Then there's a plan to failure for sure.
Tell me just a little bit about, you know, the idea you guys started out with versus where you guys are today, and less time about like, but what were some of those major hiccups that you had to like kind of pivot through and change the model, I guess? You know, I think there's no better test to what you guys built than continuing to run during the pandemic, right? Like, you know, those years were true, I'm sure, trial years that everybody, you know, pivoted in some ways. But what are some of those key things that you guys are doing differently today?
Well, I think the key thing is mostly the attitude, because I think you need to be happy when things change. I used to be always think, oh no, the requirements are more difficult, the compliance is there, the delivery window is shorter. And you'll think, oh, I just finally set up the operation to work smoothly, and then I need to adjust it again. Nowadays, I'm happy that happens because Amazon has 10.5 million companies selling to them. And there's not only Amazon, it's everywhere, right? So there is a lot of continuously merging, like companies becoming larger, becomes more complex. And it is the one that is most adjustable, the one I come with a famous quote, but that's actually the one that is going to survive. You need to be able to adjust. So you should, as an entrepreneur, think, okay, good, more rules, more complex.
Yes.
Because you're going to push out the competitors that are not thinking from that perspective.
That are lazy or that are too heavy to pivot, you know, like a boat in the water. It's got too much weight. It can't turn quickly.
Exactly.
The art of the pivot, right?
So, and I think, that's the biggest learning that you can have within a company. So, you know, embrace the change. One, and I think secondly, specifically during the pandemic, I've had, you know, I mean, it's been a very rough way of running a business because supply chain issues, price increases. We have like 100 brands and suppliers that we work for in all kinds of product categories. And we were used to get an average of twice price increases per year. So, okay, that's doable, that's manageable, never nice, obviously, but during the pandemic, we had almost every month price increases, and they're not with 2 or 3%, sometimes even 20%. That requires, it's almost impossible to steer on that. So the only thing that you can steer is crunching the numbers. And now I'm saying it, oh, you know, I understood it all. I now know what it is. It was also, you know, painful lessons that I learned, very expensive lessons to learn that, you know, your P&L, your cost price analysis, your knowing any cost basically is the most important thing to be able to steer with any market developments. So I think those are the two main things. One is, you know, embrace the change. And secondly, know your margins so you can at least steer, make sure you don't have to be profitable, but at least as long as you're not burning money during a heavy moment, that's, I think, the number one key.
I couldn't agree more. I literally went live with on YouTube with another Amazon expert today, and that's really what I was bringing to the table, was evaluating a P&L. A P&L of a brand, and really being able to look at one that was looking badly in the red all over the place, and where to make adjustments, how to view it, you know, and something that even as someone that plays somewhat of the CFO role here at Marknology still, something that used to be a sense or an area of insecurity for me was really digging into the numbers. You know, I was good at an overall, like, you know, as long as things are good, like I've been good with a budget, but really getting into the nitty gritty has been something that's taken me years to get just confident around. And but something that used to be my weakness is now my strong suit in a lot of ways, because I just knew how important it was, and can't say that enough. The brands is one. Yes. When the pandemic was happening, I got excited, not because of the danger of the pandemic, but being in e-commerce, you know, I felt like it was going to jump us forward, which it did. And I'm somebody from the bottom with, like, you know, I've had to create and carve out every opportunity I've ever had as a person. And so for me, I've always liked the hard stuff, because the hard stuff was where I could make gains on everyone else.
Right.
I just, you know, not saying I'm the smartest in the room, but maybe the hardest working. I work really, really hard. I hustle hard. Right. And I would see these opportunities as like, look, Airbnb, you know, short-term rentals, Airbnb. Do you have those in the
Netherlands? Yeah. Okay. Of course,
So Airbnb just changed the laws here in Kansas City, making it a lot harder for people to host. They have to have they've had to have permits, but now they have to have permits. They have to be in these certain areas. Like, you can't do it like this. You have the permission from the neighbors. There's just all these rules and regulations now, and people are in an uproar. Well, I'm smiling. You know, honestly, I'm not excited that they're struggling, but as somebody that has my own, that the market has gotten hard, I've done everything the right way. I did all of the hard work ahead of time, and I will continue to do that. And so same thing with e-com, Airbnb, whatever. Whenever there's a challenge, like, it's cliche, but that is the opportunity.
It's true.
If you're looking for opportunities, well, things changing and things getting harder is the opportunity you're looking for. Right. You just have to lean into that. And I can go on with you forever. I want to give you like a couple minutes here at the end of the show, talk about where people can get in contact with you. And then two questions for you. One is, what is something you're excited about that Marketplace Distri is doing in 2023? Mm-hmm. Something you're excited about in the business. And then something that you're working on or excited about in your personal life as Steph.
Okay. That's a good one. So quickly inform you who we are, what we do. So we are Amazon Marketplace operators. We have a complete in-house team. We act as import of record. We act as merchant of record. Basically, we make sure that any brand from the US or from Europe or outside Europe is able to enter the European market in a matter of weeks against a fraction of the cost and a fraction of the time. So we basically run Amazon end-to-end against a retainer business with a success fee. That's who we are and what we do. I think the most exciting thing that we are now busy about is that we work a lot with agencies. Why do we like to work with agencies? Agencies already have relationships with brands. So instead of me talking to 50 brands, I can talk to one agency that manages 50 brands. And the agency stays within their comfort zone because they focus on the brand development activities, the brand performance activities, while we on the background do all the boring stuff. So everybody stays within the comfort zone, but everybody can invoice more. The brand, because we're opening up 9 countries. The agency, because they're extending their marketing services to 9 countries without actually having the local knowledge, because we provide the local support. And we obviously by basically pushing more volume towards our infrastructure. So that is for me really interesting. Why? Because I prefer to work together with an agency and being able to, obviously, from a scalability perspective, this is much more interesting. In convincing 50 brands or convincing one agency that brings on 50 brands is, from a scalability point of view, obviously very nice. And I think also that's as a tip towards all the listeners here. I think scalability is the key in any business concept. You need to look on creating leverage, 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 leverage. So I think that should be 20% of your time is looking at your business where you're able to scale it. Because when you can scale it, you can make some money. If you don't scale, if you don't create leverage, you're going to work as hard today or next week or in 2 years from now. You need to start creating leverage. Then you're going to create some value for yourself and value also for your company, and you're going to be able to also see progress on all levels. The thing that I'm personally excited about is I'm actually busy with recruitment of a managing director. I'm now the founder and the managing director, and I'm going back into the business development role. And I think that's also a big lesson is not all roles suit you. For me, the managing director role suits when it was a startup because, you know, you do a lot of things on energy and sales obviously is super important. But then you reach a certain level, you get a management team and they need to be stimulated, etc. And you need to be good in that. If you don't have the right capabilities, you're a danger to your business. If you want to grow, you know, 10-20% per year and you're happy with that, you know, then, you know, keep sitting where you are. But if you are very ambitious goals, then you always need to be critical also towards yourself. So mostly about yourself because you're your own enemy. So I'm excited to on a certain moment to say to people, hey, sorry, not my problem. Talk to this new guy so I can actually do again the thing that excited me 5 years ago is, you know, business development and recruitment of new brands and thinking about concepts. It's what makes me excited.
I love it. And I'm someone that's gone through that same phase myself. Last couple of years, I've been very much scaling, management, improvement, optimization of the system for scaling. I don't love it. I don't love nitpicking areas. I like thinking about growth and relationship and like new ideas. That's what got me into this in the first place. It's definitely what I enjoy. I get more fulfillment out of things like this, being on a podcast, building relationships, putting feelers out there. But you do what you have to do. You do what you have to get done. Right. You know, that's what hustlers do. So, but it's good to know that and be like, look, I'm going into this role for a year, 2 years, whatever I have to do to get it done. But as soon as I can, I'm going to try to get somebody else in this spot or promote someone within or train someone within. So Awesome. I'm going to have all of Steph's contact links in the bio, but Steph, just quickly here verbally, where can people get in contact with you, follow your journey, learn more about Marketplace Distri?
Well, find me on LinkedIn, the Steph van Boekel. Yeah, as well, it's good that you're going to put it in the links because you're not going to be able to recognize it. And obviously to our website, marketplacedistri.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Steph. Thank you, Hustlers, for tuning in. It's been an awesome episode, really just learning about an opportunity that is, scaling globally and what it can mean for businesses. And as business gets hard, I'm telling you guys, international expansion is where it's at. It takes time to get going. With Steph, it really cuts that time down. Find something that's doable, that's bite-sizable for you in 2023. And I think, going to Europe is there. There's a whole lot more that comes into selling globally outside of operations, which is, really getting the marketing messaging down. You know, you can't sell the German market the same way you can to the US market. You got to localize. You got to learn some of these things, translations, and the different nuance that goes in between the different marketplaces like demand. But operations is 100% the most important. And Steph, this has been a great hour really chatting through how long it's even taken you to learn about those things to then be able to build a business to help others. So absolutely awesome. And thanks again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io. Do you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders? Let Fullscale help. When you visit Fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions, then let the platform match you up with a fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers, testers, and leaders. At Fullscale, they specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit Fullscale.io. Steph, thank you for staying up late with us, and thank you for all your knowledge. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Andrew. It was nice meeting you.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.